It's a brand new episode and the first one of 2014 for Cycle Talk SA. I am Brad Brown. Happy New Year to you. We are halfway through January, so a little belated, but better late than never, I guess. It's good to be with you once again and to kick off a brand new year talking cycling here on South Africa's premier cycling podcast. It's good to have you on board. Thank you for taking the time to download and listen to it. Coming up on this week's show, I just literally got off a Skype with the most amazing dude you'll ever chat to in your life. He is doing something amazing. He has been on the road for 6 months. He's cycling across Africa, and not just across Africa. His plan is to cycle through every single country on the continent, and he'll end up heading into Europe and then getting to London for the 2015 Rugby World Cup. I'm talking about Ron Rutland. He's doing some amazing things, doing it in honor and to celebrate the life of someone pretty cool as well. So that's coming up on this week's show. And then I also, this week, touched base with Brad Jackson from the VW Cape Herald. That's coming up pretty soon, and entries are closing even sooner. So chat to Brad to find out a little bit about the race down in Eastern Cape in Port Elizabeth. Find out what you can expect from a road cycling and a mountain biking perspective, actually. So if you're going to be down in PE and you're planning on riding that race, you can get all the details here on Cycle Talk SA this week. Before we get into the show, though, as always, if you'd like to be in touch, you can podcast at cycletalksa.co.za. You can also tweet us at cycletalksa or pop us a message on our Facebook page as well. And I ask it all the time too, if you wouldn't mind, if you listen to this podcast through the iTunes platform, if you would leave us a review on iTunes and a star rating. It just lets other people find this podcast just pretty much like you did. And obviously the more people who rate and review the podcast, the easier it is and the easier it makes it for other people to find the podcast on that platform. So if you would do that, I'd be highly appreciative. And who knows, I could give you a shout out in an upcoming episode of Cycle Talk here. So, but let's get straight into this week's show and the awesome chat I had with Ron Rutland. I stumbled across this young man on social media and am blown away by what he's doing. South African, up north in Africa, on a bicycle. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the show this week, Ron Rutland. Ron, thanks for taking the time to catch up. You're currently in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia, taking a slight break to sort out some more visas, but yeah, off the bike, and it's good to catch up.
Oh, Brad, yeah, thanks so much for reaching out to me. Wonderful to hear your voice, and yeah, I've had a wonderful week off the bike, but yeah, edging to get going again.
Ron, the reason I stumbled across you, I'm always looking out for guys doing some really amazing things and taking on some great adventures, and that's how I found you. And you are doing something amazing at the moment. You're 6 months into this trip, which you reckon will take you about 2 years to complete. You basically cycling from South Africa, through every single country. I mean, it's been done that, I mean, Rian Mansus circumnavigated, like literally went all around the map of Africa. There's guys that have cycled from Cape Town to Cairo. But you going through Africa, going through every single country on the continent. Tell us why.
Brad, at its most basic level, I think it's a fulfillment of a boyhood dream of mine. Not specifically cycling through Africa, but, you know, growing up, I read every book there was to read about travel and adventure, and whether it was people crossing oceans or exploring the Antarctic, or, you know, people riding motorbikes around the world or whatever it was. And I guess I've never grown out of that. Those dreams have never died. And as I've grown older, I mean, I think you introduced me as a young man. That's very flattering. But it's only with older age that I've actually started realizing that it's not always somebody else that has to be doing these great things. And kind of got tired of reading about other people's stories and decided I wanted to, yeah, just do something different. And you know, you mentioned Rian Mansa, and he's certainly his book, and subsequently I've got to know him fairly well, and he's been a big influence and a big inspiration. And you know, when I sat and looked at this map of Africa, you know, I've only took up cycling a couple of years ago, and then realized that, you know, what a wonderful way to travel and see the world. And I looked at this map of Africa, and I wanted to do something in Africa, and I just couldn't decide which area to do. So I said, bugger it, you know, I'm going to do the whole thing. And it's not, you know, I'm not trying to do a world first per se, or do something that nobody else has done. But for me, I've never done it, so it's an adventure and a half. And you know, I plotted a route that I think is possible, and 18 countries into a 48 country African leg of the journey anyway, It's so far proved, yeah, it's proved the case. You know, it's been interesting, but, you know, having the time of my life.
Yeah, you say the African part of the journey, it's not ending in Africa. Tell us what the whole plan is.
Yeah, Brad, so I was sitting with this map of Africa probably in December 2012 when it was all coming together. And, yeah, I decided I wanted to do every country. And basically, because I've read every book and blog and everything about the subject, you kind of get an idea for what distances people cover and what distances are, you know, realistic. And, you know, I'm a huge, huge rugby fan. I've been to every Rugby World Cup since 95 and you know, to go and watch them. So it was inevitable that somehow, by hook or by crook, I would have been in London anyway to watch the World Cup. And, you know, I suddenly realized, it dawned upon me that if I left soon, which ended up being 6 months later, I could just about get to London. So I plotted this route. I thought I'd cycle to go and support the Springboks, get to London in time, and then watch the Rugby World Cup. So I tried to plot the route that would end in Morocco, and I could just cross the straits and cycle up through Spain. But little old Lesotho basically defined the whole trip. So it kind of forced me east to start. And from there, I just couldn't get the route to work to end in Morocco. So I actually end in Cairo in terms of the African side of it, which will be my 48th country, Egypt. And then, I want to try and reach Cairo by about February, March 2015. And as you say, you know, there's a lot of people who do a lot of cycling, and that's Cairo to London is a fairly well-documented route through the Middle East and up through Turkey and West Eastern Europe to London. And I think it'll take me about 6 or 7 months. So I'll be riding through Europe in the summer. I haven't plotted the exact route through Europe. I'll just see how it goes. And then, I'll sort of reach London by September.
Ron, it sounds absolutely amazing. Tell me a little bit about sort of what goes into planning a trip like this. You say it was, if you did it fairly soon, you could have made it by London. So there was 6 months that you basically had to put this thing together. But what goes into putting something like this together?
Brad, I think, to be honest with you, people ask me what the hardest thing is. And the hardest thing is getting to the start line. You know, I'm a bachelor and, I obviously have a wife and kids. It'd be quite hard to do this if I had that. So I guess from that point of view, I didn't have too much to worry about. But, you know, you still got your life in Cape Town. You know, you've got to, you know, it's things like, you know, getting out of your leases, getting rid of your stuff. You know, I've been renting I was renting a furnished flat, so I didn't have much stuff of my own. But literally it was, you know, in terms of, it was more preparing to sort of clear up my life and just sort of put everything, you know, to get that sort of done was as hard as planning the trip. You know, as I say, basically once you've bought a bicycle and, you know, you've only got four panniers, you're going to take so much stuff. So in terms of stuff to take, it's actually relatively straightforward. But what I spent a lot of time was obviously, as I say, was getting my life sorted out and making sure that there was nothing hanging over my head when I left. But it was also logistically, I think came down to the biggest challenge of this whole journey was going to be visas. And as a South African passport holder in Africa, you probably need about 35 visas out of the 48 countries I was going to, and some of them are pretty difficult. So I spent a lot of time planning how I was going to do the visas, and that probably took as much time as anything else. And then it's the old thing of looking for money and looking for support. And I think the most important thing is I set the date of the 1st of July or 30th of June for me as the departure date. And I said, no matter what happens, I'm leaving on that date. If I'm ready or not ready, I've got the money, I don't have the money, I'm going to be leaving and make it work. And I think somebody told me there's nothing more powerful than a made up mind. And, you know, I'd made my mind up and I sold everything I had. I gave everything I couldn't sell to charity. So I was leaving come hell or high water. And it was just, you know, the support that I received from so many people to get me to that start line is incredible, absolutely incredible. And, yeah, I left on the 30th of June and, with some wonderful support from people and, you know, some corporates, but also people that are behind the scenes, just friends that have just sort of believed in my dream as well and helped make it happen.
Yeah, it's amazing. You talk about making that decision and setting a date and just going, things fall into place when you do that. And Ron, what's been the biggest challenge? I mean, you've mentioned the visas, but obviously people have their sort of preconceived notions of what Africa is like. Well, what's been your biggest challenge outside of the visas to have to deal with?
Well, I think it gets a little bit part of my journey is to try and prove that Africa isn't this big, scary place, you know, my biggest challenge simply has been water. You know, you learn to live without a shower and you learn to live without those sort of comforts. But there's been two or three times when I've actually run out of water. And you realize that we have all our busy day-to-day lives. We get concerned about such relatively irrelevant things, and you realize that at its most basic level, water is the most important thing to us. So there's been two or three times when I've run out of water and, been in a little bit of trouble, but just by some, stroke of luck or miracle, whatever you want to call it, just when things have looked their darkest, I've gone around a corner and there's been the first village I've seen in 2 days, and they've got a water pump that's working, or, you find a stream with some water. So, yeah, short answer, water. And the second thing would just be the general road conditions. I'm not a fantastic cyclist, or am my bike fully weighted, fully packed is about 45 kilos. So when you've got days and days of roads that are sandy, it's pretty tough going, eh? And that's when you really find, your mind starts questioning and things like that. But yeah, so it's that would be the thing, various road conditions and water. But people-wise, Brad, it is unbelievable. I've been on the road, as I say, just over 6 months. Had absolutely not one security concern. I've had no one try to nick anything. And I've stayed in some pretty interesting places. And so many people, I think almost expected me to have my bike stolen by now, or, expected to me to have my bag stolen or something like that. But it's just, you obviously have common sense, and, especially in big cities when you do go through them, you would in any big cities in the world. But in the last 6.5 months, I've never ever once had it, been turned down for a place to pitch my tent. And from a human point of view, it just gives you so much, confidence in the human race, and just in people in general. And you realize that 99.9% of human beings are amazing people. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's the 0.1% that seem to make the news and seem to make, give our perceptions of Africa or from the outside world anyway. So, that's been a little bit of the story of my journey so far.
It's actually so funny that people sort of expect your bike to get nicked because you're in Africa. I can tell you a story. My dad cycled across Spain the last European summer last year, and he had his bicycle stolen in Spain. So, I mean,
there we go, exactly.
It's actually really, really funny. Ron, I mean, it sounds amazing. As far as the sort of distances that you're riding on a daily basis, you said that it was quite difficult and you don't really want to get caught up in the sort of daily grind of how many Ks you're doing. But on average, what are you sort of covering?
Barry, I've done the short answer is I've done everything from about 15 Ks, which was every one of those kilometers, every meter was pushed through sand on some days in western Mozambique. To a day when I did 180 Ks in northern Zambia, which had a great tailwind, wonderful roads, all seemed to be downhill and everything kind of clicked into place. So that's the two extremes of the scale. But I'd say on a normal riding day, anywhere between sort of 70 to 100 Ks. That would be a normal day on the bike. And obviously, that also builds in enough time, enough fat, I guess, that I can have days off when there's, your body needs to rest. You can't cycle every single day for 800 days. But you need to rest. You need to sort out visas. There are going to be times when you're going to, feel a bit under the weather and get a bit sick. So you need to build in a little bit of fat. If you take total distance, which I'm going to estimate to be probably around between 40 and 45,000 kilometers by the time I've finished, divided by the rough number of days, which was 700 and something or 800 days, it works out to somewhere in the mid-50s is what I need to if I cycled every single day. So on average, I need to do about 350 Ks a week. But I try and do that in 5 days instead of 7 days.
Okay, so then you basically back up and you've got some time to just chill and catch your breath basically and get logistics in order for the next sort of part of the journey, I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually had for me, the journey, the moment I made the decision to do this trip was for the adventure started and some people that, I met in the lead up to it. And one of those was Kingsley Holgate, who was super helpful. And it's a bit of a story in its own. I through a friend, arranged a chance to meet with him at his home in Natal. I thought he might give me an hour of his time on a Sunday afternoon. So I arrived at his home at 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon and left 2 o'clock on Monday morning. So it was a very liquid fueled meeting. But it was, to spend some time with a guy like that was hugely inspiring for me, and to see his enthusiasm, someone who's, on Wikipedia is the most traveled man in Africa or something. And to see his enthusiasm for this project was amazing. But so my point was that he's the one that really said to me, Ron, and without being corny, it's not about the bike, This is an amazing African adventure you're about to undertake that you happen to be doing on a bicycle. So keep reminding yourself that, and you're going to be, this is, the route that you're doing is unique. Some of the areas you're going through, you're never going to see them again in your life. So make sure that you actually you absorb everything around you and you take it and you build in enough time that you can experience some of these iconic African places and people and ceremonies and things like that. So I've been very cognizant of that. And of course, there's days, you know, when you're riding and you're just trying to, you know, you're trying to build up some, I guess credit in inverted commas. So you've got some miles in the bank. But I have, you know, and that's the great thing about a bicycle is that the unique thing about a bicycle is you feel every little incline, decline, you feel every breath of wind, you feel, you hear every noise, you smell everything. I mean, it's second to walking. There's no way you could be closer to people. So, you know, I'm always stopping in villages for a cup of coffee or whatever the local food is there and chatting to people. And, you know, obviously the language barrier is often a thing, but it's amazing how humans can still talk to each other and still communicate, even if you don't share a common language. So for me, without being corny, it's not about the bike. That's the sort of the reason for not, I guess, sprinting through Africa.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an amazing, amazing adventure. And I'm really chuffed that you are sort of stopping along the way and getting to sort of meet people. And I think I sort of came across you just before Christmas, actually, on social media. And I was checking out your photos of your Christmas lunch. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Brad, I ended up, it's quite hard to plan, you know, quite hard to plan exactly where you're going to be when, but I found myself in far northeast corner of Uganda in a border town, not knowing a soul. And on Christmas Eve, I arrived in this town, I think it was, in the late afternoon. And, you know, I was looking a little bit lost and just trying to find a place to pitch my tent or, you know, a cheap, grimy guest house to check into. With this Portuguese guy weighs me down. I says, what the hell are you doing, basically? So I got chatting to him. And anyway, then he introduced me to a South Sudan friend of his who runs a local shop on the high street there. And we had an afternoon coffee together. And next thing it's the South Sudanese guy invites myself and this Portuguese guy works for an NGO to lunch the next day at his home with his family. So I had a goat stew Christmas lunch with a Portuguese guy and a South Sudanese guy and his family in far northwest Uganda. So it's a pretty unique Christmas and makes for a very, very memorable one too.
That's one you're never going to forget, I'm absolutely sure.
No, completely. And it's those little things, you know, you never know what's around the corner. You know, I was expecting another day on the bike. Absolutely, it was just going to be another day for me. And next thing, I got persuaded to spend, to get off the bike for a day and then join these guys. And it's been an absolute highlight. And you know, there was nothing fancy about it or anything, but it's just a simple meal with wonderful folk in a unique part of the world. And those are exactly the memories that you take away from this trip.
Ron, you obviously are, but how are you documenting this whole journey?
Brad, I've actually, I've got a dictaphone is the short answer, and I try and do something every day, a couple of minutes into a dictaphone, and I've got a friend of mine who's kindly agreed to transcribe those. So I think that's good. Those are kind of what my diaries are. That's stuff that I'm just going to keep in my own background. So afterwards, it's just for me, it's a record of my journey. And it's the nice thing with a dictaphone is that you can hear how you feel. You know, A, my handwriting is so shocking that I wouldn't be able to read if I wrote my own things down. I listen back to some of them sometimes, you know, and you can actually hear your tone of voice. You can hear if you're on a high or if it was a struggling day. So I think that's a nice thing with doing it like that. But also I've just started doing, you know, I had so many friends that have been so, you know, so interested in what I'm doing, and I was struggling to sort of update my website, you know, with blog entries and finding things, finding any sort of routine. So I've just started doing a weekly update. And basically it's very simple. I've done a little template for myself where I talk about some of the highlights of the week, some of the challenges of the week, you know, where I cycled to and from, and just some of my thoughts. And I email that out to basically anybody who wants it. And I also post it on my website, which is fatkidonabike.com. And I send it out through my Facebook page and Twitter as well. So I'm trying to do that on a weekly basis. I'm doing it for about 6 or 7 weeks now. And it's a great way for me to sort of, remember little things that have happened and for people that are interested to share my journey.
Yeah, I mean, that's also, I've been following those and they're amazing. What I'll do is I'll post those links as well. So if people want to follow your journey along with us, they can. And then just finally, awesome, to wrap things up, Ron, tell me about Leti. I mean, there's a big part of this as well that you're sort of doing it for someone else as well. Tell us the story about Leti.
Yeah, Brad, it's an interesting one. Her name is Nikki Haynes, and she's a very dear friend of mine. Her and her husband are a wonderful couple with three young kids. And I've only got to know Leti since I've been back in South Africa the last few years, but she's just one of those people, and they're one of those couples just from the moment we got to know each other, we became very firm friends. And a couple of years ago, she got diagnosed with breast cancer, and her and her husband are the most active people you can possibly imagine. I don't think their family has a TV because their kids are just out and about, you know, climbing trees, running. He's a keen paddler. Nikki's a great cyclist and runner, and they're just active, healthy people. And for someone, you know, for that, and that can, you know, so healthy to get struck down with cancer was a shock to so many of us. And basically the way that all of us who know her well have kind of supported her is by celebrating our own health and, you know, celebrating the fact that we are active, and that's the way that we support her, you know. And anyway, so she fought breast cancer, and for that whole year we were doing things like Leti's runs and Leti's this, and just, you know, building up this goodwill and sending her positive vibes and just showing that we're supporting her. And then wonderfully, at the Two Oceans, at the beginning of 2013, that Two Oceans, she got cleared with cancer just before that. And it was just a time of celebration, and we did a Leti's, well, some of the guys did it. I was unfortunately injured, but some of the guys did a Leti's run, which basically they did a big run overnight before the Two Oceans, basically ran to the start line and ran the Two Oceans, and it was such a time of happiness. And then about a week later, or 2 weeks later, Zug, who's Nikki's husband, sends out an email to all of us, and it's the most, I've never in my life had an emptier feeling. And basically, the short of it was, guys, Nikki had a pain in her shoulder, went to just thought it was, you know, a bruise from a fall or something on her back. But unfortunately, the cancer's come back, and it's come back much more viciously. It's come back, it's attacked the bones. And yeah, so from the high of having it cleared literally a month later, having this news, was devastating. And so, you know, for me, I'd already decided I was doing the ride, and for me, it gave my ride some purpose. So I dedicated it to Leti. I've called it Leti's Ride. And for me, it's, you know, I feel so helpless that I can do so little. But, you know, when I'm having, you know, I joked with Nix and I said to, you know, I'm calling my bike Leti. So that every day when I straddle you, you know, I'll be thinking, of you. And, you know, on the days when I'm having a good day, I just genuinely take a moment so often during the day just to smile and just to realize how lucky I am that I'm physically able to do this journey, that I'm healthy enough to be, you know, cycling the most amazing continent in the world, and, you know, just living a dream. And then on days when I think I'm having a tough day, you know, I'm pushing my bike through sand or grinding it, you know, I do so often just, you know, it puts everything into perspective. I just think about Nix and her battle and just realize how insignificant my problems are to what she's going through. So it's been an incredibly difficult 11 months or so, but Nikki is the bravest human being I've ever met in my life, and she's fighting it incredibly hard. It hasn't been easy. It's been very, very difficult. But if there's anyone who's going to beat this thing, it's her.
Ron Ratlin, that's an amazing, amazing story. I think what you're doing is phenomenal. And, I definitely look forward to catching up again soon. Safe travels, and we'll definitely chat soon.
Brad, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to chat.
We have, we talk about it so often here on the show. We have some amazing races around the country, and there's another one coming up very, very soon. Entries are open now. They're not going to be open for too much longer, and it's an absolute pleasure to welcome the race director, Brad Jackson, of the VW Cape Herald onto the show this week. Brad, thanks for taking the time to chat to us. Time's running out, isn't it?
Yes, the guys don't have too much time to get the entries in.
Brad, tell us a little bit about the Cape Herald. I mean, it's the second oldest classic, if I'm correct, in South Africa. It's been going for a long time. Can you tell us a little bit about the history?
It started, I think it's 29 years now. Originally, obviously, the road cycling event was the main focus, and for many years, it was. Yeah, one of the national classics on the road cycling circuit. Always been a feeding event for the Cape August, and about 5 years ago, we introduced a mountain bike component as often as a 105K road cycling event, as well as a mountain bike race.
I mean, like so many of these... So many of these races do sort of evolve where it started out as one thing, but it turns into a whole sort of festival of cycling. You've mentioned the road component, but let's chat a little bit about the mountain bike side of things. That's fairly new addition to the race. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, look, so the road event takes place mostly within Port Elizabeth, you know, around the city. To get to the real nice mountain biking, we've obviously got to head out of town a little bit. So the mountain bike event takes place in Paddo, which is about a 40-minute drive from PE. So yeah, the mountain bike event takes place on the Saturday with the road event on the Sunday.
All right, and then as far as the mountain bike event goes, can you talk us through a little bit what people can expect if they are planning on riding distance-wise and sort of terrain that they'll be covering?
Yeah, okay. So a lot of mountain bikers will be familiar with the Addo-Zeeburg area. In the Eastern Cape, it's probably one of the favorite mountain biking playgrounds. So it takes place out in Addo. The kind of terrain is quite spectacular, you know, and it is extremely diverse, right? It's actually all sorts of different biomes. They start out on the flats in the orange orchards and head up into the Zeeburg Mountains, with spectacular views and really good single track. Some really nice mountain bike trails that have been set up in that area.
All right, sounds awesome. And distance of the race itself, Brad?
Okay, so the mountain bike, there's three distances on offer. The 80K is called an extreme challenge. It's quite a challenging route, 80 kilometer. Then there's a 60K for your sort of adventurous riders, a little bit easier than the 80K. And then a 50K is really for the novices and families that want to go out and just enjoy getting on their mountain bike.
Oh, that's awesome. So there's a little bit for everyone. So, I mean, it's a whole family, and as mountain biking is, I mean, it's a whole family thing. So you can bring everyone down, and there's something that's challenging enough to keep sort of all levels interested. And then let's just touch on the road side of things too. Can you tell us a little bit about the distance and if somebody's never done the Cape Herald before, can you tell us what they can expect from a road point of view?
Sure. Okay. So on the road side, we have the main distance is 105 kilometer, which is a fairly challenging route. You know, we've put in a few of the hills, you know, the popular PE cyclist hills. It heads out along a very, very scenic route, you know, through the suburbs, starts out going through the suburbs of PE. Then you head out into like sort of outlying sort of farm areas and that. And then probably half of the route you're sort of hugging the coast on your way back into the finish. So beautiful views of the, you know, the sea as you ride along the beachfront, finishing around the Marine Drive. So yeah, very scenic route, a couple of little hills, nothing too extreme on the climate side, but a few hills to keep things interesting. And then we have also the 55K, which is, you know, for the not so serious riders. Also a very scenic route. Again, half of it at least is kind of along the coastline with spectacular views and so on. The 55, obviously, a lot less climbing and a lot less difficult.
All right, awesome. So two like diverse distances there for people of different abilities as well. Entries, they're closing fairly soon. How can people go about entering, and when do they close?
Yeah, entries are open on the website, heraldcycletour.co.za, online entries. Yeah, so entries are open. There is late entries available at the registration at the expo, but there's a late entry penalty of 50% of the entry fee. So we really encourage people to get onto the website and get their free entries in. Yeah, maybe just something else to mention quickly is we've got quite a nice expo that takes place, you know, along with the registration. It's got the boardwalk on the PE beachfront. We've got some great things in store, you know, plenty of stalls and cycling-related things for the guys to see. We're also going to have Dylan Victor down doing some trial demos. Should be quite entertaining. I don't know if the PE people have seen anything like that before. So, yeah, it's going to be quite a nice festival. We've got a beer tent and whatnot set up on the Saturday afternoon down at the beachfront. So, yeah, it's a real nice festival, all festival weekend.
That sounds fantastic, and PE always sort of rolls it out. I mean, I always go down for Ironman every year and absolutely love Port Elizabeth. So, yeah, it's a great place to cycle. And Brad, want to wish you all the best. That online entry, the website where people can enter, what is it?
It's heraldcycletour.co.za.
It's as easy as that, heraldcycletour.co.za. What I'll do is I'll pop those or that link in the show notes as well for this episode, and you can enter and click directly straight through there. Brad Jackson, race director of the VW Cape Herald Tour, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to catching up soon. Well, the first edition of Cycle Talk SA for 2014 in the bag. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Ron. And, yeah, I will definitely keep an eye out with what he's up to. And we'll get him on the show again in the next 4 to 6 weeks and just continue following his journey here on Cycle Talk SA. I think what he's doing is phenomenal. And I think deep down, every single one of us would love to do something like that. But obviously, not really possible for most. It's really difficult, but hey, I live vicariously through Ron Rutland. I don't mind. I think it's fantastic what he's doing. And also thanks a lot to Brad Jackson for chatting to us today as well. Until next week, be in touch. Podcast at cycletalksa.co.za. Tweet us, cycletalksa, or look us up on Facebook as well. I look forward to hearing from you. Until then, have yourself a superb week, and we'll chat soon. Cheers.